Welcome to the How to Live Life Differently podcast, where we explore the art of creating genuine personal fulfillment, exciting professional achievement, and thriving, enriching relationships in real life. Because the truth is, can you really be successful if you're not fulfilled? Hey, I'm your host, Nicole Herring, an NLP practitioner, aka word nerd, and creative soul who spent years learning how to love her motherhood as much as she loves her kids. Only then to discover that what I actually needed was to trash that good on paper checklist that looked good on the outside, but really felt empty on the inside. Each week, I will share inspiring stories from guests who walk the talk, offer practical tools for taking action in your journey of fulfillment, and deliver content that supports you in interrupting and initiating life in a most empowering way. So grab your earbuds, head out for some sunshine, fold that load of laundry, or get a notebook to take some notes. You can live life differently, and I'm here to help you with the how. Let's get started. Hello, hello. Welcome back to the How to Live Life Differently podcast. I'm super excited for this month's series. And if this is the first episode you've caught on this month's series, we are talking about self-awareness. And not just at the most basic foundational level of like being able to recognize your emotions, but understanding at a more root cause of why our emotions exist and where things come up for us in every capacity. Well, not every capacity. We're only doing five guests, but you know, there's mental, emotional, physical, there's spiritual awarenesses, and even with nutrition and the way we take care of our body. So today's guest is Becky Ball. She is a registered dietitian and functional nutritionist. So thank you, Becky, so much for being here. I'm excited. Tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Yeah, thank you for that. And I'm excited to be here too and have a conversation. So So I have been a dietitian for about 16 years, I think. I've done probably lots of different things over the course of my career. Right now, I have my own private practice, and I really focus on gut health, metabolism, and sustainable weight loss. Really, my passion is helping people get to the root of their health struggles, but also to, is when it comes to the weight loss piece, is really kind of getting off of the like yo-yo dieting cycle and kind of rejecting really the dieting mindset in general and figuring out a more sustainable way to live a healthy, thriving life and maintain a healthy, sustainable weight too.
I love that. Well, thank you so much. And so a little bit of insight. So the reason why we were connected first was because in last month's series, we were talking about self-care at a deeper level. And I really went through with another woman who also does gut health, but her and I, our conversation was around the MRT testing, which I know you do too. So if you didn't catch that episode, go back and listen to it. Can you just give us like the 30-second introduction of what that is? Because I know that sometimes people are coming to you for weight loss and sometimes they're coming to you because their health is just like everything they eat is making them feel terrible, or they're just discovering that it is the food that's making them feel terrible, but they don't know which ones. So can you just give us like the quick version of what the MRT testing is?
Yeah. So an MRT stands for mediated release test, and it is a food sensitivity test, but it is kind of unique and different than a lot of the kind of what I call over-the-counter food sensitivity tests on the market, because it specifically measures your body's inflammatory response to food. And that's what a lot of like when food doesn't make us feel well, a lot of times it's because of inflammation and our body is reacting and causing an inflammatory response. And chronic inflammation can affect like literally every area of our body. A lot of our chronic diseases and health problems are connected to inflammation in some way. So it identifies the specific foods that are causing inflammation in the body. So yeah. And it can be a really, really powerful tool, as I know you know.
Yes, exactly. And just for a little bit of insight. So for the foods that came up on my list, it was like avocado, broccoli, garlic, you know, there was a couple of other like quote unquote healthy foods that you're just like, no way, like that's what's making me so sick. And I was like really doing a lot of smoothies at the time and adding, you know, like a quarter of an avocado to really beef up, you know, the fat and all that. And it just kept feeling worse and worse and worse. And so, yes, like if I did some elimination diets and wasn't getting better. And so I ended up doing this test with a different doctor who's unavailable for an interview. But so that's why I ended up meeting Becky, was because I was looking for a podcast guest around that. But what I found was that we really connected a lot on the conversation of like, what is it that once you understand what's really impacting your health with the foods that you're eating, with just the way that you're feeling, there's another layer to that that I felt like once I understood what was going on with my body, I experienced a lot of loss of having freedom to eat the foods that I really wanted to. And then I kind of overcame that with starting to realize how much better I was feeling. And so the loss of having the freedom to just eat whatever I wanted sort of was negated with feeling that much better, that it didn't really impact me. But I have learned, because of other people that are in my life and also a previous client that I worked with, that some people actually have a relationship with food where it's an emotional experience. It's a coping mechanism. And so, especially if, you know, you're working with someone and they want to have, you know, experience weight loss or I don't know what you would say, like reset their metabolism. Like, what's the right word for it? So tell me a little bit about what happens when clients come to you and they really want to change their relationship with food, the relationship with their weight and their body, and doing it in a way that's sustainable. Because I know that sometimes people think, oh, once I'm going to get to the number on the scale, then I'll be happy. Then I'll feel good about myself. And that actually isn't the case. You have to retrain your brain to like and love yourself. And I think it's important to be able to do that before you hit the goal, before you're actually wearing the pants that you think you, you know, want to fit in, and that's going to make you feel happy and confident. So tell us a little bit about that journey for your clients.
Yeah. I feel like that's maybe there's like two separate topics in there.
Sure, for sure.
You know, because I think that there is, like, for one, you hit it on the body image issue, and I totally agree with you, is that we have to, in the process, we have to be working on, like, from the very, very beginning, like how we talk to ourselves, like how we view our bodies, because you are completely right. That is totally a myth. Like, we all think, like, well, when I get to this size, or when I, you know, hit this certain goal, like, then I'm going to feel confident in my body, then I'm going to feel good about myself, and I'm going to love my body. And it just simply isn't true. Like, it just does not happen. If you, you know, we have to be cultivating that. And I think that is totally true. So I want to kind of maybe like talk first about the other issue, though, as far as that you hit on, was like relationship with food. And because that is, I think, something that I feel like whether some people identify the fact that emotional eating is an issue for them or not, I feel like everybody usually needs to work on that as we're working on to working towards a sustainable, healthy weight, or just any health goals. And I think that first and foremost, just identifying the fact that food is nourishment, but it is also emotional, it's also comfort, it's also pleasure. Like, it is all of those things. Yep. And it's not really helpful to deny that. It's not really helpful to try to make food only about nourishment, right? Like, and just like put all that aside. Like, and because I think we, especially if you struggle with emotional eating, a lot of people like beat themselves up about eating emotionally and feel like there's something wrong with that. And I think, first of all, just acknowledging the fact that like we all do, like we all eat emotionally, and like we all eat for like connection and pleasure. And it's sometimes we eat not because like it's good for us, or because it's we are hungry. And like, that's okay. It's part of the human experience. Yeah. I think to acknowledge that is okay. When it's a problem is when that is like, you know, it's out of proportion, right? Like, we're consistently using food in a way that's not really meant to be used. Like, you know, it's like, that's our primary coping skill. Or every time we have a negative emotion, like we turn to food. Like, those are patterns we need to dig into and to rewrite, right? We don't want to be, you know, like we're consistently on a regular daily basis, like turning to food, like as our primary comfort.
Yep.
That's unhelpful. But I think removing like the shame around emotional eating, I think, is really important at the very beginning. I also think, want to just mention something you said in your, talking about your experience with the MRT and like freedom with food, you know. I'm really passionate about helping people find more freedom with food and feeling more flexibility. And I think freedom is a part of having a healthy relationship with food. But I think we need to like redefine what freedom is, right? Okay. Like freedom is not like I can just do whatever I want, or I can eat whatever I want, right? Because I think like freedom is also like being able to feel well and like being empowered to like eat and enjoy food and feel good. And like, so I think we need to like really ask ourselves, like, to just to be able to eat anything and feel like crap, is that freedom? You know,
No, it
so
definitely isn't. Yeah, agreed.
that's it. Yeah. So I think, you know, when it comes to like this conversation about self-awareness, like, you know, information and understanding, I think like what works for your body and how food affects your body, like that is freedom, because that's empowerment. Like, because now you get to decide, like now you have the power to choose. Like, you know, like for you, maybe it's like, do I want to eat the avocado and feel terrible? Like,
Never,
or do
never.
I, yeah. Or do I want to be like, I don't really need that. And then it's like, you have the power to choose. Like now you get to decide because you have the knowledge. And the reality is that there's no moral value associated with food. That's another piece. I think getting people to the place where they can like let go of the fact that like some foods are good and some foods are bad, or I'm good if I eat good, and I hear clients all the time say like, I was really bad this weekend. I'm like, you were not bad
I
because of how you
know, I've heard
ate.
that so much too. And you know what's interesting is that this is what I say when you are, it's like it's good food or it's bad food. What we're actually saying is like I'm bad or I'm good. And then it's like when you're a good person, you're a right person, and when you're a bad person, you have to punish yourself. And so I literally have had clients that be like, "Oh, gosh, I had this dessert. It was so incredible, but I'm going to pay for that tomorrow. I'm going to pay for that at the gym." And I was like, "What if we were taking care of our body? And what if going to the gym was an act of pure self-love, not out of loathing, and where you were actually able to be like, I enjoyed the hell out of that dessert, and I love running, and so I'm going to really enjoy both. I'm going to enjoy the way I run, and I'm going to enjoy having had the dessert, and I actually create an opportunity in my life to enjoy both." And so I'm not a workout person, but I do love a good walk and I love a good dancing session. And so I know specifically, like in reference to what you're saying about how, like, what works for you in your body, right? Like, what is the food that works for you? What creates that sense of nourishment for you, and knowing, you know, even through the leap testing, like what is the food that is going to make you sick, and not just avoiding it for the sake of like, this is now a rule you have to follow, but it's like, oh, it's a complete act of self-love. Like my body deserves the absolute best, and I'm going to give it everything I can so it can perform the way it can and wants to, because I love myself that much, right? Like that's the ideal.
I've helped several people in my practice, you know, transition to a gluten-free diet because of, you know, like, I mean, I do stool testing too, and often on the stool test I see like gluten antibodies, you know, will be high, and I'm like, okay, so really, like your body's reacting to gluten, we probably should transition, you know, off of this. You're clearly having an immune response. And that's always like a pro what I've seen in helping people go through that process. I mean, really, it's the same with the MRT. Like anytime you're giving up foods, you know, it's an emotional process. Like, and I always tell my clients, like, it's just prepare yourself. Like right now, I know you're kind of excited. Like people at the beginning are kind of, you know, are kind of like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad to have an answer. I'm excited to feel better. And so the, you know, when you first find out, you're like, okay, like usually feel pretty positive, and then you start thinking about all the things that like your favorite foods that you're not gonna eat anymore, or like this these traditions, like you're not gonna eat grandma's cinnamon rolls anymore because they have gluten,
Oh,
and like and there's
yeah, exactly.
and there's like some grief that comes along with it. And I
Yes.
always tell my clients ahead of time, like it's okay to feel that like grief over like the loss of it, and just know like that's a part of it. Let yourself grieve, and like it's you're gonna get the other side, and you're gonna realize it feels good to feel good, and you're gonna find new favorites, and it's gonna be fine like when you get the other side of it. But a lot of times what happens is like as clients this and I don't know why it's specifically I see this where I help people go gluten free. I don't know why it's specifically with that, but a lot of times I'll see people like do really well for a few weeks, and they're like, oh my gosh, I feel amazing, and then they have like some kind of setback. Like they go out to eat with friends, and sometimes like I've had clients that'll have friends that like kind of be like, that's not real, like, you know, like kind of put, you know, like talk down on them for like trying to make this change. Or sometimes I've even had people with spouses that do that, and then they're like, okay, you know, I'm just gonna like eat the burger, I'm just gonna have the bun, like it's not a big deal, like, you know, they'll talk themselves into like this is gonna be fine, and then they feel like horrible afterwards, like horrible. And like I've just seen the pattern so many times, and like I just I like always tell my clients, it is fine. Like it's totally fine to have a setback there. And when it comes to food, there are no failures with food, right? Like people always say, like, I messed up, I failed. You can't fail with food, but it's, everything's a learning experience, right? Like this is just information. Like you take that experience and you reflect on it, and you now get to decide, like, okay, now I clearly know like how that affected my body, and you need to reflect on like how do you want to feel. And you can decide, like, even though I did the testing and I'm giving you the information, like I'm showing you here's the immune reaction like from the testing in your body, it doesn't mean like that you have to be gluten free. Like you still get to decide
Yes.
what
Well,
are
and
you
I'll
going to
just
do with that
say,
information.
yeah, no. What are you going to do about it is literally one of my most favorite client words, like comments, because every time they have a new awareness of something, and it's like, great, what are you going to do about it? Because the awareness is only part of the problem, or having an understanding and reading a book and like now having new information, that's only part of the solution. And so it's like, what are you going to do with it is the next question. And I can offer you some insight for a couple of reasons. One, being an NLP practitioner and also discovering that I was gluten intolerant almost 15 years ago, before it was, I don't want to say a fad, but like it was like, you know, now the thing, like, oh, you're gluten intolerant, like every, like, let's get picky about it, you know. But what I will say is that I had a friend who discovered she had celiac, and I started when my son, it was actually Easter, like, which is funny because yesterday was Easter, so depending on when you're listening to this podcast, I literally just hit the 14-year anniversary of being gluten-free, Easter. So I guess not exactly by the date, but at any rate, we went to a brunch at, oh, maybe it was Mother's Day. Actually, it was a Mother's Day brunch. And we went to a brunch, and I had been gluten-free for a few weeks, and I had a breakdown, if you will, of willpower, because we went to this beautiful hotel that had this gorgeous Mother's Day brunch, and they had croissants. And if there's still one thing after all these years, it would be the one and only thing that I feel like I still miss out on, and it is a good croissant. And I ate it. And when we were driving home, my son, who was about 7 months at the time, I looked 7 months pregnant driving home from this brunch, and like my stomach hurt so bad. I was bloated beyond belief. My husband was like, "Holy cow, what is that?" And I was like, "I feel terrible. Everything hurt." And so what I can tell you is that was a really clear indication. I was like, "Okay, this actually is helping me." 'Cause then I had, you know, obviously a little bit of that flashback of like, I was coping with this feeling, less obvious, but I was still coping with that feeling in my body for a long time, longer than I even understood what gluten, didn't even know what celiac or gluten was all those years prior to that. But what I hadn't done yet was really settled into the self-concept of it was just who I was. I was just somebody who ate gluten-free. I hadn't moved into that version of myself. I was still a person who was working on learning how to eat gluten-free. I was still a person who was working on following these specific dietary rules. I was still a person who was experimenting with her health. I hadn't become a person who's just gluten-free. And so for me, I know that the self-concept work that you do is, you know, with coaching, and it's just like, that's when you overcome the willpower, is when who you are is just, that's just who you are. It would never even occur to me to try to explain why I'm gluten-free to anyone. It would never even occur to me to eat gluten so I don't offend someone. It would never occur to me just to eat the bun so that I wouldn't be problematic or like causing a disruption at the ordering, you know, like with the server. Like, none of those things even come close to it. And I have to say, have a loving partner who supported my need for being gluten-free, even when the gluten-free options were just terrible. He was still like supportive of me trying to figure out how to cook around that. And he was open to helping to learn to cook around that. And I even had my in-laws were especially supportive. Like, they didn't know what to do, but they were like, tell me what to buy and I will buy it, but I don't know what to do. And then there's been a lot of times where I just was like, I will bring my own thing. Please cook what you want to cook, and I will just bring my own meal, because it is so difficult. And after I'd done the MRT test, especially with finding out the garlic, I'm like, there's not a single sauce spice, dressing. There is not a single thing that you buy off the market or off of the shelves at the store that doesn't have garlic, basically. And right. So I would say like that part of it too is like, yes, this is why sometimes they have those willpower is because they just don't fully see themselves as a person who's like, this is just my mm-hmm. identity. I am just gluten free. Yeah. And I think people pleasing tendencies, but also just like fear of judgment, fear of rejection, like all of those really deep, deep core things that keep people from speaking their truth, being confident mm-hmm. in who they are at a really, you know, big level. And even in some families where it's like, if you weren't taught to advocate for yourself at an early age,
yeah.
learning how to do that as an adult is still very uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
So yeah. there's like, I'm like, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but that's the identity piece that I think is what you help people to kind of move mm-hmm. through, and the guilt and shame of like, why isn't this easier for me? Or why did I make the mistake? And then why did I do this to myself? And it's like, you're moving into a new identity that can take time.
Yeah. I love that you shared all that, because I think all that is so insightful and so true. And I think that's really true of trying to adopt positive habits too. As you're talking, I was thinking about like some of the mindset work that I work on with like clients that are trying to get more consistent about exercise. Mm-hmm. And it can be the same thing. Like I have clients all the time that like, I hear them say things about like, you know, I'm just like, you know, I'm not a very active person, or like I just, like it's like people that have struggled with being active their whole lives, like they've taken that identity. And I had a conversation with a client the other day, actually. She's been working hard on weight loss for a while, and it's been challenging. And she, one of her big challenges is that she has a sedentary desk job. She literally sits 10 hours a day, and it's so like she just doesn't get a lot of movement. And we've been working on trying to like find ways to like throughout her day, just to like, how do you just move your body? Cause like your joints are going to feel better. You're going to like have more energy if you move, like plus it's going to help with weight loss and all these things. And, you know, can you like take a break, you know, between, you know, set a timer, take a little break, go like walk up and down the stairs a couple of times. And she's like, yeah, I could do that. But like, I'm like, there's a part of me that worries, like, what are people going to say? You know, like what are people going to like comments they're going to make? And I'm like, that's a real fear, right? Like we sometimes like, as we're moving into like changing that identity, like we do like, we're kind of worried about what are people going to think or what people are going to say. I'm like, who cares? Yeah. Who cares? Like you get to decide, you know, if like, this is what I need to do for me. But I think that as you start to adopt, like I am a person, I am a fit person. Like I am someone who moves my body. Like I am someone who, you know, makes choices to care for myself. That's a new identity for a lot of people. Like if you've not been someone who is active, or you've not been someone who even is someone who you feel like I practice self-care, or even just like I eat healthy. Like for some people, that's a really new identity. And I think like everything that you just shared from your journey, I think really applies to that too. Like we have to work towards shifting that identity, and that's where we get sustainable change, right? Like we work on becoming this different person. And then eventually, once these habits that felt really hard, like they become more natural, I've been exercising regularly most of my adult life. Same as you. Like I'm an avid walker. Like I do lift weights, but I'm not like, you know, like a cardio bunny, like spending hours at the gym, but it's like a regular part of my life. I don't have to think and like try to rationalize with myself and like decide like, do I really want to work out this week? I don't go through that mental battle anymore, but it's because it's become like, that's part of my identity. And I think if we can, sometimes we have to like decide, you know, for a while, we have to just keep telling ourselves, like, declare like I am becoming this person, even if our actions don't quite line up. And then we have to just keep practicing those behaviors until they become part of who we are. And then eventually we get to the point where it's like, I do these things, like I eat this certain way. I have these self-care practices. I do these things for myself and it is who I am. But it is a journey, right? Like it's a process of getting like, I'm sure this is part of what you do. I'm assuming that with NLP, but like rewiring the brain and like moving towards that new identity. And that's where sustainability comes.
Exactly. And here, this will be a great tip. whether or not you've used it with your clients or if anyone is listening. So as an exercise for this, literally, I have a client who is almost the same. Like, she works a very sedentary job and works like at a desk all the time. And I'm like, it's okay for you to get up and go outside. You're allowed to have lunch breaks. Like, you should take your lunch break outside, like go for a walk and pack a lunch and make sure you're getting out, like eating at your desk. That's got to stop, right? So, and then I had another person who I was in a conversation with. This was a male, and he was talking about how like he would love, what was he saying? He said, sometimes I don't want to go to the gym, but I still want to work out. And I'm like, well, why don't you just work out at home? And he's like, well, I don't really have the space in my house. And I was like, okay, well, why don't you go in your backyard? And like, he's like, yeah, but then I just worry, like if I did that, or if I was in my garage and my garage door was open, like what people would think. And here's the exercise. You say, well, what would they think? And so you can actually say, like, give me 10 things you think somebody is going to think when they see you working out in your home gym, or, you know, doing whatever. And so we went through all of the things, like he just like started spouting things off, and we kind of started listing them down. And I said, so, okay, what this is called classic projection. I said, so you are literally taking your own subconscious thoughts about yourself and you are placing them on someone else. And so I said, now we're going to take everything that you just wrote down. And I think that they're going to think this, and they're going to think that, or they're going to believe that, or whatever. And I said, and that those, now you can say, I think this about me when I work out. I think this about me when I'm, you know, doing a home gym thing. I think this about me when I make a sound when I'm pumping the iron, right? Because it's like, you know, he's like, oh, I hate it when people grunt. But every now and again, like if I'm pushing up, I'm like trying not to make a sound because I hate it when people make a sound. I'm like, well, what do you think? What do you think it means when you make a sound? And so what we did was we got down to the core of like subconsciously his own thoughts about himself, but he was projecting them and saying that this is what he feared judgment of, but really it was how he was judging himself. So what that does is it gives people an insight of how to think different thoughts that are not prohibiting them from taking the action that they want to for themselves. And so that's the rewiring part, is to really take responsibility for these fears of judgment, or, you know, the assumptions of what other people are thinking, and being like, oh, those are actually 100% my thoughts. I made them up. I gave them to somebody else and said, those are their thoughts. And then blamed them for having judgment against me. And I said, so it's just a big old projection. And then what you can do is once you see, you can reflect back on this. How can I actually change the way I'm my languaging with myself? And then you can rewire your brain by thinking newer, better thoughts that are actually serving you. And, you know, the secret to, you know, thought work is it's not just what are the thoughts that we're thinking, but it's like, what are the feelings in the body? How are we connecting to it? Because if you're saying something that's overly positive and you're like trying to, you know, fake yourself into feeling better, it's too much. And so you have to move to a more neutral thought. And so instead of being like, you know, someone who loves to run and you're not a runner, right? Like you see, be like, I am, you know, I taking a walk every day is something I'm getting better at. And so then it's like, you're not like trying to pretend you're loving running, but you are, you can say in a more neutral, in with more neutrality and moving towards neutral, where your body is not going to resist, your subconscious is not going to be like, red flag, you're a liar, that's not true, you know? And then you don't have to move through the resentment of not following through with your word, or regretting your decision to not do the walk, and then beating yourself up and doing the shame cycle that you're talking about, especially with making, you know, with not following through on a food decision and then having regret, or the bad, you know, not feeling well. And then the shame cycle that comes from that, like it's completely unnecessary. You can just say that was not the right idea, and I'm going to do it differently next time. And you just move on. You just move on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. I think that was all like so helpful. And I've had those conversations too about, you know, like you, like, yeah, sometimes if we go too far as like, you know, I think, you know, like people will try like affirmations. I'm like, affirmations are great, but yeah, you're right. It's like, if you like give, say this affirmation though, and it's like so far from what you're living, you're going to be like, your like brain is going to be like, I'm not buying that. Like, I don't believe that. So finding something that's like, that you think that you can, like your body will accept as true, or your brain will say like, okay, like I could get on board with that. Like, instead of saying like, you know, I am someone who I don't know, like whatever you're working towards, say like, I'm someone who's going to, who continues to show up. Like I'm someone who can, who like, you know, is, I'm an action taker. Like maybe you can believe that a little bit more than being, you know, than this truth you're working towards, but we keep continuing to push towards this new identity. Yeah. So that was all super, super helpful.
Yeah, no, you're welcome. And so I want to just, I don't want to like totally steer the conversation away, but I know it, we were, so we talked a little bit about how, you know, it's like your relationship with food can be, can start with like people wanting to really heal their body because it's like in disarray. I don't know, or it's not disarray. I don't know what the right word I'm like thinking of right now. Disrupted, right? So they have really disrupted.
Out of balance, yeah.
Yeah, out of balance, like, yeah, disarray. That's my lifestyle with three boys. I'm like, that's the best. That's the word that comes to my mind about my life most of the time. I'm like, well, you don't know what's going on. So, but also, you know, you were talking about how a lot of your clients do come to you because it's like they want to reset their metabolism. They are really looking for weight loss, you know? So what are some tips? Because I think you said, I think you said that you do have a guide about, you know, resetting the metabolism and it, not that everything is like, this is the foolproof way for everybody. Cause really what we do is help create like sustainable systematic systems or not systematic, but like processes and routines that are specific to each individual person. But there are going to be a few things that are going to help most people. And I know you created a guide on that. So talk us a little bit about that.
Yeah, about the guide or just some basics of metabolism?
Both, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I love, you know, I think that when I use the word metabolism, like I always am a little bit careful because, you know, we can like go to Target and see all these like crazy claims about, you know, like fire up your metabolism. And, you know, like it's like this idea of like, you know, like lose weight without trying, you know, you just like, you know, eat these like metabolism teas. So, and I think that, you know, obviously is not... not where we're going. That's not where we're going. I don't represent that and or support that type of thinking. But honestly, like our metabolism is so important. And metabolism does a whole lot more in our bodies than just burn calories. Like most of us think like we think metabolism is like, I want to, you know, I need to have a good metabolism so I can burn a lot of calories, I can stay thin. But metabolism is literally all of the functions in your body that are converting food to energy. And so when our metabolism is not healthy and it's not thriving, then yeah, we are going to struggle a lot more with weight management, but also we're going to, our energy is going to be probably poor. Like we're going to, you know, like it can affect like your skin issues, your mental clarity, like a lot of anything in your body that requires energy, like is going to, even things like hormone balance, gut health, all those are affected by our metabolism because they all need energy. All those functions need a healthy metabolism to thrive. So I think, you know, like a lot of our typical dieting strategies, like a lot of times like we think of like, okay, I need to lose weight. I need to like eat this, either like cut out this list of foods that are not good for me, you know, or are fattening, or we're like, I just need to eat less. I need to eat less. I need to eat less. I need to eat less. And a lot of women that come to me for weight loss are not eating too much. If anything, they're under eating because we keep hearing this message like, I need to eat less to lose weight. And then it's like, if I'm not seeing progress, well, I'm probably eating too much. I need to eat less.
Yeah.
But that is actually working against your metabolism because your metabolism, like it needs energy, it needs nutrients to thrive. So some of the, so like, honestly, one of the most important things for healthy metabolism is to eat enough.
And yeah, this is where it's a whole like calories in, calories out, like it's just math. And that's not really true.
Especially not for women. Like, I mean, yes, calories matter, like they do, but it's not that simple because like, especially as women, like we have hormones and hormones run the show and hormones affect like our metabolism so strongly that like, it's just not that simple. Mm-hmm. And, but yeah, that's like the number one thing you can do for your metabolism is to eat enough. Now, and this is where maybe the self-awareness piece comes in. And there's like, has to be some learning because there's a sweet spot, right? And especially if you're working on weight loss, yes, like overeating and undereating both are going to keep you from achieving your goals, but severely restricting how much you're eating or cutting out a whole bunch of foods for without reason, right? This is separate from like doing testing and knowing foods don't work in your body, cutting out foods just for the sake of the fact that like, I think these are not good or unhealthy foods, or I think these are maybe going to make me gain weight. It's not helpful. So really nourishing your body. One of the things that I focus on a lot with clients is just getting more quality foods in the diet before we even try to think about like, you know, altering calorie intake is just getting more more quality.
Yep.
Because when you eat more whole foods, more nutritious foods that give your body what they need, you're going to feel more satiated. You're going to feel your cravings and your hunger start to come under control. And then we can start working towards, okay, now we can tweak things. But like, I mean, yes, I have a guide. So it is 10 science-backed ways that you can boost your metabolism or support your metabolism, things you can implement right away. But the things I always have women start with is like eat enough food. If you were thinking about food all day long, if you're excessively hungry, like you, like, you know, just like can't stop thinking about your next meal, like the sign you're probably not eating enough. Like you should not be like hungry all day like that. Really prioritizing protein and fiber are really, really good for your metabolism, for stabilizing blood sugar. Blood sugar is regulation, is really important for metabolism, mood, energy, gut health, hormones. You got to have like balanced blood sugar. So those are the things that I usually recommend women start with. And then and then managing stress is the other thing we start with. So stress is a huge impact on your metabolism as well. So I feel like that's a whole other conversation.
It is, but so okay, but I do want to ask, just like, I don't, what is the cortisol hormone impact on metabolism? Like, while we're on that topic, is there a direct conversation that those two have with each other, I guess?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say the two, there's a lot of hormones that affect metabolism, but usually when I say hormones, like most women automatically think to the sex hormones, like estrogen, progesterone. Yes, those affect metabolism, but honestly, the biggest hormones that affect metabolism are insulin and cortisol.
Okay.
And insulin and cortisol are really connected. They both are affected by blood sugar balance. So, which is one of the, why I say like foundationally work on stabilizing blood sugar. People think blood sugar is for people with diabetes. Yes, but everybody should be thinking about blood sugar balance. When our blood sugar goes up, we release insulin. That helps our, you know, food, you know, energy get into our cells. But insulin is also a fat storage hormone. So if we've got way too, you know, too much insulin around all the time, if we're constantly stimulating insulin, our bodies are going to resist weight loss. We're going to store more body fat. But when blood sugar drops, we stimulate cortisol. Cortisol is a stress hormone. So it brings up blood sugar. But cortisol also signals like stress in your body. So that's one way we stimulate cortisol. And then also just stress. So when we are stressed all the time, we're constantly stimulating cortisol. If our circadian rhythm is really off, which is like our sleep wake cycle, that has a huge impact on cortisol. Cortisol is not a bad thing. If we don't have enough cortisol, it's problematic. We're not going to feel very energetic and vibrant. But it's when we're stimulating all the time because of constant stress, that's, you know, we're not managing, or because of blood sugar imbalance. Those are really the two biggest things I see causing cortisol issues. We just have too much cortisol, or it's like not peaking at the right times. We're just kind of stimulating it all the time. Then yeah, it's cortisol, because it's a stress hormone. Part of its job is to help our bodies to cope with stress. And if you think about it, like if you're from a biological perspective, like if your body is being threatened, like think about the scenario of like you're in the woods and you face an angry bear. Okay. Like that's really what cortisol is for. Like cortisol surges, and its job is to protect you, to like, you know, ramp up everything in your body so that you can protect yourself. You know, you're in those situations, like, you know, losing body fat is absolutely not the priority. Your body's like, how do I preserve as much as I can?
Right.
And like, if I'm stressed and I'm, you know, like maybe in a dangerous situation, I need to like, you know, keep all my extra reserves in case I, you know, need to face a threat. So that's literally what cortisol is signaling in your body, is we need to keep ourselves safe. So that is going to signal your body, like hang on to body fat, you know, like preserve energy, hang on to all of our extra stores. So it like literally just makes your body resist letting go of weight. It does downright, you know, affect your metabolic rate, but it's even more than that, like making your body specifically hang on to body fat, because body fat is safety. You know,
right.
Like if you're
right.
Needing to face a threat or even like starvation, if you're like going to face maybe like starvation, like you need to preserve body fat, right? I think your body doesn't care about your weight loss goal. It cares about keeping you safe. So.
Yep. Interesting. I find it so fascinating. And I do, it's like understanding, I wish I had learned at the beginning of my motherhood 15 years ago, what it meant to self-regulate and to understand, you know, the way that my hormones were really all over the place postpartum and then pregnancy, you know, hormones, postpartum hormones, and then all the re-regulation and those periods in between. And then, oh, I'm pregnant again, you know, three babies. And it's just like, I learned so much in the last few years, and I understand information is just widely available at a different pace than it was when I was in the earlier parts of my motherhood.
Mm-hmm.
Pinterest was brand new, and it was mainly about like bloggers and their like, you know, tips on toy rotation and, you know, like crafts and recipes. And it wasn't as, now we have like TikTok and we like learn everything we know off of Instagram and TikTok, which, you know, check your sources, take it as a grain of salt. Like you can get information, but don't like use it as a doctor. But there's so much information. And I think it's so helpful to know that even with like knowing raising three boys, the amount of noise and chaos and stuff that happens, it's like, I feel like I've been in sometimes it feels like constantly in survival mode. And when I used to think about what survival mode is in the beginning of my motherhood, I thought it was just because like my kids were so young and everything that we were doing was just like on demand when they, you know, like feeding when they were hungry and changing a diaper, not sleeping enough, like barely hanging on. But what I understand now is that the survival mode that I was in was actually, it was like the crazy influx of hormones that I was constantly like on, and like everything like had to stop to go to do this. And, you know, like in taking care of the boys, I don't want to say there was never, but I really struggled with feeling like I had a handle on things all the time. And that had nothing to do with them. They were normal boys being loud, being crazy, being rambunctious, doing all the things. I did not know how to get out of survival mode in my body because my hormones and the cortisol and the adrenaline and constantly feel like I was running behind and there was never a break in the laundry. Like that was the survival mode was just the primitive brain, not the way they were behaving. It wasn't the motherhood itself. It was my inability to understand the way the brain worked and how my body was responding to the stresses and not having a process to deal with that stress. And I think you probably know better than me, but I think that's where a lot of those food intolerances really came from, was the constant stress on the body and the feeling like I never knew what I was doing. I never was confident in myself as a mom in the first few years. And I think that that's what led to all of my disruptive gut issues, because I was just in chronic, constant stress.
That's the answer that like nobody wants to hear. I always tell people like no one wants to think it's stress, but it almost always is. Stress is the root cause of, I think, so many of our health concerns. And I think it's a discouraging thing to hear, because some people are like, what do I do about that? Right. It's hard to, like, it feels like my life is stressful. Like, and it feels it, you know, if you don't have the tools, like, it can like a powerless state.
Feel
like,
oh, I'm starting to lose you a little bit. I don't know. Your mics are coming in and out. I can't hear you at all.
Still no sound?
Oh, now I can hear you.
Okay.
All right. Sorry for the interruption, folks. I'm not a podcast editor, so you're going to have, we're just going to keep going with it. Roll.
Yeah, apologize for that. So
no worries.
I think that can be frustrating to hear, but I totally agree with you that stress is an underlying cause of a lot of gut issues specifically. Gut and hormone issues are almost always, you know, are connected to stress. Like we have to deal with the stress piece in order to heal from those. And food sensitivities almost always have a root cause, you know. So they don't
Right.
like, it's not like we just, you know, like are born not being able to tolerate, you know, a bunch of foods.
Yep.
Especially if you have a long list of foods that are bothering you, there's probably a root cause. There's probably some, you know, your gut is not as healthy as it should be. Like your digestive function is probably suffering. Stress is usually a piece of that. It could be the root cause. So addressing stress is a part of it, but then we also need to look at like what else has gotten out of balance in your body because of stress or because of lifestyle, and then work on rebalancing things. Often, I a lot of times have people reintroduce foods. Sometimes they'll have like one or two that is like, that's, you know, just not going to come back to the diet. It doesn't seem to work for me. But a lot of times people can increase their tolerance to foods when we address some of those root factors. Definitely stress is always a part of that conversation and rebalancing the body.
Amazing. Well, and I will say that the first time I realized I was gluten intolerant, I believe it was stress to the body. And then the second time I actually had H. pylori from traveling to Costa Rica. And then I had a bacterial infection in the gut that got worse and worse and worse and presented as like breathing problems because it was affecting my esophagus, but not my lungs. And so I thought it was I couldn't breathe. And doctors were prescribing asthma medication, which it wasn't lung related, so it didn't matter. It took a long time, but yeah, so it's like sometimes it can be from an actual the root causes there's an infection somewhere or something like that, and sometimes it can be stress related, and definitely, you know, a combination of both is not out of the question either. So anyway, okay, so I'm going to definitely link your guide in the show notes, and thank you so much for coming and talking to us. Like, I feel like we've gone a lot, but really I want to just like really close on the fine lines, you know, close it back up, circle back around to just really talking about like what is self-awareness when it comes to the way you're taking care of your body, the way you're eating food, the way that you're choosing to be healthier, and doing this out of self-love, not of self-loathing. And, you know, if you're new to the podcast and you missed the self-love series, like definitely go back and listen to that one too. But I will sum it up with what self-love in my world and the way I work with clients is saying, you know, the dialogue in which you're making changes really does matter. That's the NLP practitioner in me, neuro-linguistic programming. It's saying that, hey, like the neurology of your brain, the paths in which your brain works and the highways in which are automatic, it can take time to forge a new path and to think things differently and to do things out of self-love and change your identity of who you are. But it's like, you know, if you were doing all the right things and you're taking care of your body and you're eating the right foods and you're, you know, taking supplements and you're working out and you're working on the way you communicate with the people that you care about and you're doing all that, but the inner dialogue that you're running with is like, you're disgusting, you're going to pay for that, don't cheat, you're not good at this. Like, if the inner dialogue that's happening while you're doing all these other things that are nice for yourself, then it's like negating it. Like, no one would want to be in a relationship like that where it was like all they did was say mean and nasty things or be defeated all the time. Like, you're never going to get any better at this. Like, you deserve what you got, you know, all those things. And so self-love for me isn't actually anything about the action. It's 100% about the dialogue. And so if you can change the way you talk to yourself, it will impact the way you take care of yourself. And if you can do it out of self-love instead of self-loathing, like, that is half the battle, right? It's like how we free ourselves from ourselves is the method in which we take action, not the actions itself. So self-awareness, like, what would you like to sum up? Like, what would you love for all of your clients to know about self-awareness and the way they take care of their body? Because that was my take. Like, what do you want your clients to know?
Well, and then just say, well, and to reflect on what you just said is that I totally agree. I tell my clients all the time, you can't heal a body that you hate, right? Like we can't shame ourselves into health, and we can't heal bodies that we hate. So I think the self-love piece is really
Think you need
important.
to make a t-shirt that says that and give it to your clients. Be like, this is your workout
My
t-shirt.
tagline. But as far as self-awareness, I think the take home as far as what I would love for people to understand is that there is no one right diet or like way of living for everyone. And number one, like your body is unique, but also like your way of doing life is also unique. And like we all want somebody to tell us what to do. Like I have so many clients be like, just tell me what to eat, like, and I will do it. But it really only works for a short period of time. We don't function that well, and you are going to be much more successful in the long term for long-term health and really changing your life, if you are willing to do a little bit of work of paying attention to like what really works for your body. Yeah. And following a diet that makes you feel terrible. Like I have all the time, like clients will say like, oh, I did this diet and it worked for me. And what they mean by it worked was like, I lost 30 pounds, but like, they were like, it was so hard to follow, or they didn't like, you know, it was so rigid. Like they didn't like feel very well. Like, you know, they also ended up with like horrible energy or like their thyroid levels, you know, like tank. Like, I'm like, and then they gained weight back when they finished. I'm like, did that work? Did that, I wouldn't define that as working. Right. So I think you figuring out like what actually, you know, does make you get closer to your goals, right? That's important. Like what actually moves the needle forward, but taking the time to like figure out like what actually works for my body.
Yep.
And is going to work for my life, and recognizing like that's important. Like what is like the best diet for you probably doesn't have a name.
Yeah.
Like
true.
You know, like,
oh, I love that so much.
Yeah. I mean, we have to take some things that we know from science, right? Like there's things we know about nutrition that are valuable for our health. So taking some of those things and incorporating them, but figuring out how on the implementation side, how do we take this knowledge, these things that we know about metabolism, about nutrition, about gut health, and then figuring out like, how does this work for me?
Yep.
And like learning to trust your own body. A lot of us don't trust our own bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a lot of like hormone imbalances, you know, like gut issues, you probably have lost trust with your body because you're like, oh my gosh, what is my body doing? But regaining some trust for your body and trusting that like my body gives me signals and tells me like, this is not working for me. Like, and learning to maybe kind of pay attention to that is super, super important.
Yeah.
For one, having a good relationship with your body and food, but really for getting more sustainable health and results, we have to learn to like honor some of those signals that our body is giving us and learning how to honor them and respond to them in an appropriate way. So.
Well, and it's interesting that you would say that, because I'm like have one thing that kind of stuck out to me when you say like the thing that they said that worked for them was that this one thing, they lost 30 pounds. And then it's like, but did it really work if we didn't create lifestyle changes that were sustainable so that you could maintain that? And this is where the yo-yo dieting comes from. And that in itself is the foundation and breeding ground for distrust, where it was like, well, I did this thing and then I lost all this weight, but it all came back. And so it's like they, whether they blame themselves instead, you know what I mean? How do they recover from that feeling of defeat of having lost the weight and putting it back on? And how do you get back up onto, you know, onto the horse, if you will, of like wanting to lose weight again, where you're like, the reality is it's probably just going to come back anyway. And so if that's the underlying belief of like, okay, once I lose the weight, it's only going to return, you're already creating this, you know, starting the relationship of like healing your body with a sense of distrust, because you're like, it's probably not going to work for me. They want it to, but it's probably not going to. And an interesting connection that I had with that was like, I actually had a friend whose husband, this was many, many years ago, he struggled with alcohol. And I remember at one point they were having a conversation. He was like, I can quit anytime I want to. I've done it 100 times. And it was kind of like, do you not hear yourself? Like, you don't not, you've never actually quit drinking. You've taken pauses so that you felt like you could manage the alcohol, but you've never given up the alcohol. And he didn't see that. He just thought like, oh, I'm really good at quitting drinking. But he was, what he was really doing was like, I created an interruption to a bad cycle, and then got to a place where I just re-engaged with the old habits and just tried to manage them better, which is what people do when they're like, oh, I'm going to lose the weight and then I'm going to go back to my previous lifestyle, but I'm going to manage it differently. But then they don't, because the brain has those neural pathways that are just so strong, and you haven't shifted yourself in the identity, done enough of the work for the longest amount of time the length of time that it takes for you to actually just really see yourself as a completely different person who just lives life differently, which is like, no coincidence. That's the name of my podcast of like how to live life differently. It's like, you know, to initiate change out of self-love for enough of a time where you have just changed the way you connect and see yourself. And so the rest of all the actions you do are led through that. And it's, you know, it's the game changer. So anyway, thank you so much. And any last words? Do we have anything else we want to talk about or anything else we want to mention?
I think not, because we're talking about so much. I don't want to get into the rabbit trail, but I've really enjoyed this conversation and all of your input into the conversation too, and very insightful. So thanks for just thanks for having me.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, everyone, for listening. I will be sure to add Becky's contact information on the show notes so that you can get in touch with her if, you know, you really want to have some support on your, you know, like creating a diet, I hate the word diet, but creating a food plan, creating a relationship with your food, creating a plan moving forward where you're feeling really well supported, and somebody who's, you know, obviously knows what she's talking about. Cause I think sometimes, you know, we feel like we could do it on our own and there's so much misinformation out there, and having a feedback loop is so important. So find someone you like and trust and take action. And just like always, just remember that you matter, and it's good to take care of yourself out of love instead of loathing, and you can live your life differently. Thanks, everyone. We'll talk to you next time.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Live Life Differently podcast, where we support people who seek to have it all: personal fulfillment, professional achievement, and enriching relationships too. Because around here, it all matters. If you haven't checked out the How to Live Life Differently website yet, what are you waiting for? Go check it out. While you're there, you can take a look at the online classes and the upcoming in-person workshops to see what might help you initiate your next level of expansion. I have lots of options coming your way at various price points because I believe that expensive paywalls suck. So there's going to be something for everyone. And if you're not finding something you're looking for in the library, or if there's a topic you'd like to hear about on the podcast, please send me a message on Instagram. I am here to help, and I love hearing from my listeners, because I truly just want to provide content that adds value to your life. So thanks again for stopping by the How to Live Life Differently podcast, where we aim to make life and success fun again.